Welcome to the Vegan Connection podcast. Today's guest is Adam Sobel, chef and owner of The Cinnamon Snail and author of Street Vegan. Adam shares how he created the first vegan food truck and some of the challenges of operating a food business in New York City.
So I'd love to get right into it and find out how and why you went vegan.
Okay, so I've now been vegan a little over 18 years. I went vegan when my first daughter was born. And my wife, or, you know, I guess she wasn't my wife then at that point yet, but we'd been together and she was really the first vegan person I got close to. And I really appreciated and respected the ethics behind that decision. But at that point in my life, I was like 18, 17. I thought like it just seemed like some, it would like take away some like freedom of mine or something. You know, that was kind of my thinking. So I respected it. I thought it was cool. And I like very much agreed with it.
But you weren't ready for your own limitations.
I was like, an asshole. So then I started working in restaurants really to like learn how to make yummier food for my wife. Because she was like, being the only vegan person I knew, she was eating this diet of like canned soup and French fries. And I was like, yo, I got to learn how to make extra yummy food for this girl. So I started
Doing
a lot of experimentation and then working in restaurants really to just like get better at making her yummy stuff to eat.
That is so, wow. Hold on a second. That was your inspiration for cooking?
Yeah. Like largely. There are a couple other things. But like that's like really what motivated me to like get into
that's
it
beautiful.
Professionally.
And I want to meet your wife now.
Oh,
I wish
she's
she was here.
Dope. You should have had her on this podcast.
I would have loved
to.
She's
way more cool. Anyway, so then I started working in this like kind of fancy, like high-end non-veg restaurant. And I was learning a lot of stuff that would apply anyway to making vegan food. And yeah, and if you're open-minded, you could like learn from anything. Like,
and
I
learned
so many things that have, you know, are still like important to me in my cooking.
For sure.
That I learned there, you know. Anyway, but people would come into this restaurant and try to modify menu items to make them vegetarian or vegan. And all the other line cooks would kind of make fun of it and like, you know, kind of groan about it. And I kept finding myself sort of like coming to the defense of these people and being like, you know, it's kind of a nice thing. They're trying to not eat animals and not, you know, cause unnecessary harm. And finally, somebody was like, hey, Adam, like, if you believe in this so much, like, why aren't you vegetarian? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't really know anymore why I'm not vegetarian. And so I went vegetarian then in that restaurant. And then it was like maybe a year later that we had our first daughter. We had like a nice like home birth. And
which people weren't doing that much then, but they're doing a lot more now also
maybe,
in addition to veganism.
I hope so. I don't know. In New Jersey, not so much. New Jersey has like the highest C-section rate in the entire, maybe the in the world. It's certainly the highest in the country. It's like nearly 50% of the births. But anyway, so we had this kind of natural birth and it was a very long labor. It was maybe like 26 hours.
Oh my goodness.
And the whole time I was kind of like thinking so much about how important I knew breastfeeding was going to be for our daughter, both like physically and emotionally and
for sure.
Spiritually. And just felt like, you know, if I could recognize, you know, like how sacred that is for my own child, like how hypocritical it would be for me to step in the way of that for some other living entity. So that day, like really, that was like when I made the final decision to like I was already mostly being vegan anyway, but that was really the thing that, you know, like made the connection.
Your daughter being born?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
So yeah, that, like that one day, like the two kind of best things that ever happened to me. Yeah, so I don't know. It's funny. Like, I don't even remember my own age most of the time. Like, I have to do the math to be like, all right, I was born in this year and this month. And but, like, I know my daughter's age. And so that's how I remember how long I've been vegan.
That's a really beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
Now, you went vegan. I'm sure your wife was thrilled.
Yeah.
What types of things were you making for her that were different than her, you know, soup and French fries that we all have to deal with at some point?
I mean, I remember, like, I started messing with, like stir fries and kind of very basic stuff. I would, like, veganize, like, foods that I grew up with. So I would make, like, blintzes with kasha and fried onions and, like,
that's yummy.
Made applesauce and tofu sour cream and stuff like that. And just, like, did a lot of experimentation. And then I started working in some restaurant that really let me do what I wanted. There was like some restaurant that was not all the way vegetarian, but they would like let me create a whole vegan menu to the place. And
can
like,
you say what restaurant?
It doesn't exist anymore. Oh, okay. It's a place called the Cypress Cafe. It was just a great opportunity for me to like get paid to play around and like try different things and make up different specials. And
you're lucky because most people are so limited when, you know, they're first getting a shot in the kitchen,
right? That was maybe like the third restaurant I worked at that place. And by that time I was like already kind of knowing a little more what the hell I was doing in a kitchen.
I'm sure.
I mean, I don't know. I still like don't think I'm really like a chef per se. I mean,
that's just because you're bashful.
No, like there's people I really look up to who I'm like, yo, these people have such creativity and such like skill. And
you have a lot of creativity, and you've cooked at the James Beard House, which is a huge honor. And you know, you would never have been asked there if you weren't the type of chef that you are. So it's definitely well deserved.
All right. Well, I'll let you believe I'm a chef. I'm just like some kind of dad or something. And
making all this amazing
food. I make snacks for people, so.
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I think it's like people throw their word around like it's nothing, you know?
Oh, I hear
like
you.
Like I have so many people who over the years have like applied to work for me who they're like, oh, I'm a chef and I'm this. And
you're like, you're a cook.
Yo, let me look at your resume. And it's like, I cook at home sometimes. And like I worked at FedEx and like. Dude, I don't call myself a chef, and just people like really, if you made dinner before, you're a chef or something. I don't know. Maybe I just.
How did you come up with the idea of the cinnamon snail?
Okay, so I had been working at a restaurant in New Jersey called Down to Earth, which now one of the owners of it has the Good Karma Cafe in New Jersey. And I'd been working there for, I want to say like 5 years. And it changed hands and like the new owner basically like ran it into the ground in a very short period of time, like maybe 6 or 8 months.
It's always sad when you see that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's really difficult to run a food business. Like I struggle with in my restaurants or food truck or whatever this thing is I do has been around for like a decade now. And it's still like super hard for me to do. So I mean,
you make it look easy though.
Maybe from the outside, it's really.
I can only imagine.
But so the restaurant like very abruptly closed, and like I found out the day it closed that it was closing, and I'd been working there like for 5 years, you know.
That's so foul. They didn't give you any notice. Wow.
Yeah, that week I was actually closing on a house that we were buying from one of the previous owners of that restaurant, and it was like, oh shit, I have like a young family, and I have a mortgage I'm going to have to pay. Like, I got to do something. So I started just doing like private chefing and catering and stuff like that. And the whole time, like for years, I'd been thinking, working in this restaurant, like, man, this food is so nice. And people like think vegan food is like brown rice and steamed veggies, or think it's like some super processed Mewa fake drumstick. Like, why can't we get people who don't necessarily care about vegan food yet to try like great quality vegan food with nice ingredients and really flavorful? And so I'd been thinking for years about putting together a vegan food truck, and at the time like nobody was doing that. Like I mean, even by the time we launched it, we were the first like vegan organic food truck in the whole country.
I was gonna say, yeah.
And but for years before I actually launched it, I was like thinking, man, this would be really cool to like bring this food onto the street, and people see this like long line down the block and a pastry case full of crazy looking pastries.
That's exactly what you did.
Yeah. So, but at the time I was like, I was young, and it was also like insurmountably complicated looking. Like I didn't know what kind of insurance to get, what kind of permits, like what you need to do to like be in compliance with the DOH, you know, the health department. And I had like no money too. So eventually, like a couple years after being laid off of that restaurant, I like scraped up the tiniest amount of money from my wife and I having like a stand at our local farmer's market. And we bought like the shittiest, most decrepit food truck on all of Craigslist, and like fixed it up, you know, with a few friends of ours, just like gutted it and did all the stainless work and did the electrical work.
All yourself.
Yeah, like me and friends of mine. Like I'm not a contractor dude, but I can like do stuff.
No, but it's amazing that you know, if you didn't have resources, you had people who were resourceful too.
Yeah, and like a friend of mine did all the artwork for it. Like we went back and forth with a lot of drafts to get it looking real crazy. And
is it the same artwork you have now?
Yeah.
It's great.
He's a really talented friend of ours. And like I knew I wanted to do this thing, and I like literally didn't even plan the menu until like the week before the truck launched. I was like, I knew I would just make something yummy, and I hadn't really like thought about it that much. So then,
I guess created the menu, was it food that you were already making for yourselves?
No, not really.
Brand new?
Yeah, it was like all new stuff, and like that's something I'm very confident about. Like, there's lots of stuff I suck at, but like, I can make up new recipes all the time. Like I've had like over the years, one or two people like really copy our shit before, like straight up like, you know, come work for me and then like go make another food truck with a nearly identical menu or something.
Like no one notices.
And it's kind of funny, but like to me, like I could always make up new recipes. Anyway, so yeah, I launched this food truck, and the thing of the menu is like I really like cooking like really fancy vegan food, you know? And like, so the original menu was like all these like super like architectural looking entrees that were all stacked up all crazy and like totally not stuff you would want to eat on like a paper plate in your lap, you know, or like take with you back to your office. It was like completely...
You were trying to do the most.
Yeah, I was just like, nobody's done this truffled crazy bullshit inside out from the food truck. So
do you think you were a little ahead of your time with that stuff? Like maybe if you were to like bring some of those dishes back today, like
if I did it in like a restaurant format, it would be cool. But it was like so not practical for people to eat on their lunch break.
For sure, yeah.
So that's actually how like over time a lot of those ideas developed into like the very complex sandwiches we do, which are like basically an entree between two pieces of bread. Like there's a lot of different condiments and crunchy stuff and different textures like going on.
That's the best part.
Yeah, it makes it really fun, I think. So yeah, that's like how that kind of developed into what it is now. Yeah.
So what I loved as someone who used to follow you on Twitter way before I was on Instagram was seeing way before you were at the Pensy, was seeing, you know, the peaks and valleys of the food truck and how you guys would persevere every time. I mean, like there were sometimes the truck was breaking down once a week,
dude,
right?
We've had like the best luck ever.
Yeah, with the food truck, right?
Yeah. People like don't even know the half of it too. Cause like I try not to.
You don't want to be a Debbie Downer for
yeah,
sure.
I'm
yeah.
not trying to like broadcast how like our shit is always in shambles and like things are on fire and stuff. But
oh my goodness.
Yeah, we've had every type of delightful adventure possible.
How did you keep up the mental like strength and capacity to keep persevering and moving forward? Every time that, you know, the truck would break down or something really tough would happen.
First of all, like, I guess I owe it like a lot to my grandma, the way like her attitude was like really rubbed off on me as a kid. And she would be like in the hospital and all her best friends just died and like shit was terrible. And she'd be like having fun and being wacky and like just making the best of situations. So that I try to like have that kind of attitude a lot. And I also like have a pretty dedicated yoga and meditation practice, and that kind of keeps my head on straight. But I mean, main thing like with this business in particular is that like it's... I see it really as like a matter of life and death for animals who are otherwise going to get eaten by human beings. So as difficult as the circumstances in this line of work are for me, it's much more difficult like some creature being in a cage their whole life. And it really makes it like worth it for me to deal with overcoming whatever the challenges are. But it's definitely like a little exhausting.
A little. I'm sure it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's exhausting to witness. Like, you know, I used to feel for you and hear like, oh, but they're out. They made it there today.
Yeah, no,
and
so much
it'd be
stuff,
so like, exciting. Like, it was almost like the people that were following you were like, if you didn't show up, it's not like everyone was like, oh, screw the snail, get your shit together.
It's, got some of that. Totally.
You did?
Yeah.
I always felt like the community was like cheering you on.
Mostly, yeah.
And it was really the start of the vegan online community. Like, you know, there were some restaurants that were around, but they weren't weren't really on social media the way, you know, you guys have been from the beginning. Before the days of the Pensy, when you had to only depend on the food truck. And it really just created this excitement for everybody, like whether they were vegan or not vegan. I remember bringing donuts to friends or people I was working with, and they were like, this is not vegan. I'm like, yeah, you do not need to eat egg or dairy donut. There's no cruelty involved. And not only that, but it tastes better than any non-vegan donut I ever tried.
Aww,
so, thanks. And in addition to obviously your food, but I always feel like the donuts are what bring the non-vegans in, and then they try the food and then they're hooked.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's totally my game plan. Like, I don't almost ever eat our donuts.
I'm sure it's like working in a candy shop at this
dude,
point.
It's like the worst occupational hazard. In the beginning, I would be like driving the truck back from events, just like eating leftover cinnamon buns all day and stuff. And yeah, that fucked me up. Yeah, I used to be like a skinny little like semi-fit character. And now I'm like a donut chef or whatever I am for a living. But yeah, that was kind of like always my thing. I want to like lure people in at like what they're excited about. Like, yeah, like I'd rather get people eating really nourishing food that's very helpful to their body, you know? But if this is going to get somebody to start considering vegan food or vegetarianism, who would otherwise like not touch like a raw pizza or something, you got to like meet them where they're going to get like really excited about it and not have any more excuses anymore about why they're not yet vegetarian or vegan. And yeah, that's...
You started with just the cinnamon rolls and then you branched out into the donuts, or was it all at the same time?
Yeah, we had it all. Like in the beginning, I was doing like a way limited variety because, you know, in the beginning, it was like basically just me. My wife helped like develop a lot of the recipes with me in the beginning, especially more of the pastry stuff. And then in the beginning, first day, I had like somebody working the truck with me, like working the window basically, and I'd cook everything. And it was so slow in the beginning, I had to let them go. So the first like three quarters of the first year was literally like I'd get up at 2, make all the donuts, drive the truck somewhere, work on the truck single-handedly all day, drive it back and clean the truck and like, you know, prep some stuff and sleep for like 2 to 4 hours.
I was going
to
say, what time are you going to sleep?
Yeah, it was like, it was crazy, but I was like really excited about it. It was for the first time like my own thing I was doing, and I really like was excited about it.
Passion is the biggest thing to drive anyone.
Yeah.
And right?
There's like no other way it would have worked. Like I didn't have access to any kind of capital or anything. And yeah, it was just like what needed to be done for it to happen. And then, you know, like as it got busier, then a friend of mine, Sean, started working on the truck with me part-time. And then like as we got busier, I started having somebody with me every day. And then the biggest thing was finally when I was able to train somebody to bake instead of me and I could sleep for more 2 or 4 hours.
How long ago was that?
Oh, that was in the beginning.
How long into it? Was like a year?
That was probably the beginning of the second year or something.
Okay.
And then like by the end of the second year, we maybe had like 5 mostly full-time people, and then it like grew and grew, you know.
Everything is now made in a commercial kitchen in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, so we have a big production kitchen in Brooklyn, and that's like where our baking goes on overnight. It's also where we have a prep crew, you know, during the day who's making all our different sauces and burger patties and different stuff like that.
Especially because your space at the Pensy is super limited,
yeah,
even
limited.
If you don't have the truck out.
It's
yeah.
limited, and there's not like venting there for like frying donuts or any of the things that would require.
What's the number one selling item at the Pensy?
So it's actually just an edible DVD of Jurassic Park 2 that we make. And it's you can actually eat it.
No, you can't.
You can eat it and you can play it as long as it's in a Philips player.
Get out of here.
You can eat it and play it.
You're so funny.
We can do it.
How did you come about for writing the book?
Oh, so, you know, I'd been teaching cooking classes since like before I did the Cinnamon Snail. And then like once things got popular at the Cinnamon Snail, I was teaching at ICE, the Institute for Culinary Education, and some other cooking schools. And for years, people were like, you should do a cookbook. And like, I, again, like kind of like my feeling that I'm not like a real chef. Like I kind of felt like never really ready to do that. And I still feel like I can't write great, great recipes for people. But like, I recognize that I know enough that I can help people make some yummy thing happen in their kitchen. And just kind of coincidentally, I'd been parking on 55th and Broadway, which I hadn't even really realized at first was like the Penguin Random House building. And that was probably one of our busiest spots.
Yeah.
We'd have a super long line there. And
I used to always visit you guys there.
People from that publishing house would come eat at our place. And then, you know, my parents are literary agents and my mom specifically does like cookbooks. So at some point I was like, all right, I should like do this cookbook thing. And my mom agented it. And amongst the people who bid on it were Clarkson Potter, who were in Penguin Random House. And they were like already huge fans of The Snail and like saw how popular we were. And like they weren't maybe the highest bid on our cookbook, but I really like the cookbooks they put together. They're really big into having lots and lots of photos, which I think is important. And I knew they'd just do a really nice job with it. So I ended up going with them about it. And yeah, it was really like a very interesting experience to make a cookbook like that. Like I didn't really realize what a humongous homework assignment that was going to be.
Oh yeah.
Not just writing it, but like recipe testing and having other people recipe test. And you know, that book, like I ended up writing a lot of the stories of like what it was like operating a food truck in New York City and some of the misadventures we've had and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that was a huge wacky project.
What is your favorite recipe that's in it?
Yeah, this is going to sound like so anticlimactic, but there's like a raw chocolate pudding recipe in it. It's like three ingredients or something, and it's great. And it's so much more practical for people to make at home than like there's so many recipes in that book that are like how we actually make food for the truck. You know, nobody wants to go home and make like six different mini recipes to make a sandwich at home.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You don't want to make a marinade and a different type of aioli and this kind of marinated greens and like roast the tempeh with this type of thing and then grill it in this sauce. Like, but that's how our food is. And I didn't want to like dumb the cooking down so that it would be more practical. I wanted people to be able to recreate things that they liked on the truck. But yeah, that raw chocolate pudding and like some of the beverages and desserts in there are pretty obtainable, doable projects. And yeah, they're good. Like I eat that raw chocolate pudding all the time at home. It's yummy.
You know what's also really good is the fact that you're showing people, whether they, you know, just bought the book because they maybe want to read the stories and maybe they'll maybe make one dish or two mm-hmm. dishes. It's good for people to see that you're making everything from scratch, mm-hmm. that you're like really, you know, putting in the love into the food and into the recipes. And you're not just slapping a bunch of pre-made ingredients that you're buying wholesale together. You know what I mean? And that really is really what a chef does. So you got to give yourself a little credit.
Oh, yeah.
So let's back up a little bit. I shouldn't have jumped to the book. I would love to get back to the Pensy. So I noticed that there was a point that you had communicated through social media that you did not receive or you were not able to obtain a food truck permit
year. Back in like 2015.
Which was the year that you got the Pensy.
Yeah, like that opened, I think, beginning of 2016. So there was a year where like we were just operating at like pop-up type of things and just the farmer's market. And yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, can you talk about like how, you know, basically that food truck was your whole business, right? And then, you know, most people don't know, for instance, in LA, it's so much easier to get a permit for a food truck. Whereas in New York City, I know it's super limited. So if you could talk about, you know, I guess that whole transition and how the Pensy opportunity came about.
Sure. So yeah, basically since the early 80s, there's been like a black market for vendors permits in the city, not just for food trucks, but also for food carts. Essentially like some neighborhoods that were getting really developed, like, you know, in the 80s is like when a lot of the city started kind of like cleaning up, you know, and that really like went into the early 90s with like Times Square becoming Disneyland instead of like a prostitution vomit fest or whatever was over there before, you know?
It definitely cleaned up a lot.
Yeah, like I didn't want to be there then and now I really don't want to be there now.
Don't either.
It's a whole different thing. Like that's where you go for the like Applebee's flagship store or something. I don't know what's over there now. But anyway, so a bunch of these neighborhoods were really cleaning up and, you know, the property values were really starting to explode. And also a lot of neighborhoods were starting to bring in like more chains. You know, New York City didn't have like a ton of chain stores. And now, like, the landscape is that, like, mom and pop businesses here are, like, fucked, you know? Like, you're definitely going to get replaced with a Chase Bank or, like, Ayn Reed. So what happened was a bunch of these neighborhoods had or formed, like, business improvement districts that basically, like, interfaced between them and, like, the city council and government. And they pressured the city to put a cap on vending permits because they felt like it was devaluing their property. In some cases, like, there could be some validity to it. You know, like, there'd be some bagel store and then there'd be, like, a guy paying no rent with a bagel cart, like, right in front of his bagel store. Like, there wasn't great etiquette about this. And also, like, at the time, a lot of street vendors weren't really regulated properly by the DOH, and it was kind of gross at the time. So anyway, when those caps went in place in like 83, I think it was, basically anyone who already had a permit could keep renewing it for about $100 a year. And it was now this closed system that, like, the value of those permits skyrocketed because the people could go and, like, rent them on the black market to somebody else who really needed the permit. And, you know, this one person would pay $100 a year to renew it and rent it out for $4,000 or $5,000 a year.
It's crazy.
So, yeah, then over time, the value kept on escalating. Like, it's similar with cab medallions, though that's changed with Uber and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the value of a mobile food vendor permit in the city is like probably 12 grand a year or something. It's like just a sticker you need on the
thing. You have to get approved every single year.
Yeah,
right?
Every 2 years.
Oh, every 2 years, wow.
In any case, like, it makes things quite complicated. Mm-hmm. You have to, like, work through some kind of middleman, and then the person with the permit has to, like, attend a DOH inspection of your truck and pretend it's their truck. And, like, the city knows what's going on but can't really do anything about it because they still get pressure from the business improvement districts. It's super shady. And that's actually why you don't see a lot of, like, corporate food vending going on in the city. There's not, like, Starbucks and Burger King food trucks and carts because it's, like, technically not exactly legal to get the permit you need to operate. So anyway, I didn't give a shit about breaking the law. So I did that and it was pretty fun. And it's like what was required to do this thing I wanted to do. And I didn't think, and I don't think there's anything like immoral or unethical about.
You got the permit. I don't think you were doing anything wrong. You weren't hurting anybody. You were feeding people good, clean food.
Yeah, but it's like part of why it's been so complicated over the years, like maintaining that permit. And anyway, in 2015, it was just getting more and more and more strictly regulated. And we couldn't even get, like, it was also like kind of at the peak time of
there was a lot of
food trucks
coming out.
Being like a trend. Like, when we started, there weren't that many out. But like a few years after we had been doing it, there were so many that it was like impossible to get a parking spot.
I remember when I would first go, it was just you guys. Mm-hmm. And then a year or two after, there would be other trucks lined up. Like, you guys started like this whole trend, and not just within vegan food, but within food trucks
for
as
sure.
well.
Yeah, yeah. And then so it got to the point where actually, like, this year, you know, we got a permit, like a temporary, like, seasonal to do this summer with the food truck, which just ended like a week ago. And it's gotten so competitive with, like, the parking spaces for food trucks that we actually, like, had to hire a guy this year just to park our truck at, like, 2 a.m. for us because otherwise there'd be no way to get a parking spot. Like,
that's insane.
You show up at 6 a.m. and the block's already full of food trucks.
But see, that's what a good entrepreneur does. You keep evolving. You keep adapting. You keep figuring out. So here you are. You didn't get your permit. I'm sure you were like, how am I going to make money? Mm-hmm. You have a family, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a lot of pressure because not only do I have a family, but like I had like quite a lot of full-time employees
I
was employing. And yeah, that was like heartbreaking.
Did you seek out the Pensy or did the Pensy seek you guys
they,
out?
They sought us out.
You're very fortunate.
Yeah, because at first, you know, that was like a very like well-curated group of vendors.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were like the, I think maybe like the element that like brought some street cred or something to that project.
Definitely.
And the first year, like we were the only ones selling any food in there too. A bunch of the other vendors were like always dead in there. And then after a year, they replaced a bunch of the other vendors. And now it's like much more lively in there in general. But yeah, that was...
Yours was the only like line I ever waited on. Like there was only one line in there and it was yours.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
At first, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've been like super lucky about everything. I mean...
How much do you think a positive mindset has influenced your luck and or, you know, your success?
Well, I guess like my success, like I view it in terms of like how many people we actually impact to go vegan. And financially, like my business isn't that successful. You know, like we struggle to like pay our bills every week. You know, it's we're like a small business in a city that's like extremely expensive and difficult to run a business in. Maybe to like somebody else, they wouldn't think what I'm doing is that successful at all. But like for me, I get emails and calls all the time from people who are like, yo, I went vegetarian or vegan because of your food or because of your cookbook. For me, that's like how I measure the success of it because that's what I set out to do. I didn't set out to like retire with $1 million or something. Like I just set out to like make food and make people think about going vegetarian and vegan. So yeah, like in that's like very much in the eye of the beholder, right? So for me, like that's success. Well,
to me, as a customer or someone from the outside, it's a success because you're producing delicious food that is definitely at least planting a seed, whether someone's vegan or not vegan. You're putting out positivity. I always love that you say that if you don't like unicorns, you won't like us. Is that what you say? Is that the line?
Something
what is the line?
Like that.
Something like that.
What is it? It's funny because
it's written at the Penzi.
I made that thing up because the Penzi was like, we need a quote from you. And I sent them like five quotes and everybody else's quotes. Like when we opened, they were all like, eat my meat and stuff like that. And I sent them five and they were like all ridiculous. And that was like maybe the least outlandish. And it was something like, if you don't like puppies and rainbows and unicorns, you'll hate our food or something. And so they like printed that up on our thing.
Yeah. I love it because I feel like you guys, by not taking yourself seriously and also like being in Manhattan, right, where everyone's like hustling and on their grind and to walk in somewhere and see something like that puts a smile on my face and it's like another way of the universe saying like, don't take everything so seriously.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, don't take anything seriously.
What is the biggest thing you've learned through this whole cinnamon snail process?
It's really hard to pick one thing.
Okay. Whatever comes to mind.
You know, I guess like one thing I've learned personally from this is, you know, I never really like set out with like a business plan and exact like goal in mind. I actually like my main thing was like, oh, there's this like Vendy award for like the best street vendor in the city.
And, I was
like,
getting
there. It would be so cool if like a vegan thing won that. So like for me, that was like my only real goal I had in mind other than turning people vegan. And then when I got that, I was like, oh shit, like what's next?
You got it multiple times though.
Yeah.
How many times is it now?
It's just like six times.
And who did you go up against last? Like who did it come down to?
So actually this last time, we weren't the number one winner this last time, but this last time was the final Vendy Awards of all times that they did this year. And it was all the winners of previous years against each other.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
Which was really dope. And we won like second place this year.
Well, you won first in my heart.
Thank you. But what I was saying is that like, that's one of the things I really learned is that you know, that was kind of like not that intelligent to set into this thing with no real like plan and not really like weighing out what I wanted to do with it. Like I never really dreamed of like opening up a brick and mortar place. And, you know, so many things came our way that people were like, oh, can you make us like a wedding cake? And we'd be like, okay, cool. Now we make wedding cakes too. Can you like cater our wedding? I'd be like, yeah, sure. Now we also cater weddings too. Oh, you want to open up like this food hall thing? I'd be like, okay, now we do that. And it's just like, it's, you know, something that now I look at and I kind of am like at a place where I'm stepping back from it and looking at like what I want to be doing in the long run. And I think eventually I'm going to probably evolve this business to be like simpler and just focus on doing like things really, really well, but not trying to do everything. And that's been kind of a lesson. Like I need to not just say yes to everything, whether like it sounds good or not. I should have
anyone that I've ever, you know, met that's an entrepreneur says they don't get anywhere by saying no, that you have to say yes you have to at least be willing to at least have that conversation. Maybe not yes to whatever it is the person wants to do, but at least yes to having an open ear.
Okay.
Because think about all the times you said yes that maybe if you would have said no, have been happy with the outcome or...
That's true. But yeah, just having some like idea of like the general trajectory. Like, dude, I may be like halfway done in my life. I don't know what's next. You know, like I don't want to just like wake up one day and all I did with the last 30 years of my life was make people sandwiches. Like there's other things I can do that are fulfilling personally and like are helpful to humanity at large.
You want to keep evolving, right?
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal.
Think like, you know, some of the decisions I've made have like contributed to what I do for a living being unnecessarily stressful and complicated. And while I can and have dealt with like whatever's come my way and tried to do it as gracefully as I can, like it's just not that intelligent to like set myself up for like an endless parade of 24/7 emergencies. And I evolved to just like focus on doing one thing and doing it great instead of like trying to do everything there is.
So do you think you would like to open up a restaurant and maybe go back to what you were putting out in the beginning with the cinnamon snail with those more elaborate dishes?
Not just at this time in my life, but maybe eventually. I really have a great appreciation for that. And my sense is to do what's not being done. And that's actually another thing that's like has me stepping back at this point is that, you know, when I started this and I was like the only vegan food truck in America at the time, and there weren't really any places to get vegan donuts, like hardly at all on the East Coast. It was like something that wasn't being done, and I was really excited to fulfill that. And now like there's so many vegan food trucks. New Jersey has like a vegan food truck festival every year, and it's awesome. I'm really happy to see that happen. And there's like tons of different places that have vegan donuts now. And now it's time for me to do something else that's like not being done. And there's like so many things that nobody's doing vegan that I'd be excited to do and offer. But like, you know, if there's like already people doing now more or less what I set out to do, like I kind of like to get onto something else that's exciting and fresh and untapped.
What I love about your story is that you were kind of forced to become an entrepreneur, right? The restaurant you were working at closed and you were like, what am I going to do now? And you explained how Cinnamon Snail, the food truck, first came about. What I like is that creativity and creating in the kitchen is what drove you to start this business. And it seems like out of all of the minutiae of running a business and everything that you've gone through, it seems like no matter what, you still enjoy creating. And that's what it seems like. That's what's keeping your passion is saying, okay, what am I going to create next? Mm-hmm. Would you stay within the same type of food that you're making, or would you do something completely different?
Oh yeah, something completely. I mean, definitely vegan, no question. But there's several things I want to do that.
So
are
it might
like
not necessarily be like a sandwich,
right?
Might be an actual.
Yeah, actually,
dish.
Like to be quite honest, like I've found like while I can still create new stuff, for like I kind of find that to be a little stifling creatively to like have to always be making stuff in the same format mm-hmm. and to like appeal to the same expectations and. Like, I'm happy to do it, but I'm kind of, like, excited to start doing something.
So we all have to stay tuned for that. Stay tuned
that's
to
right.
the cinnamon snail. Is there anything else that's coming about? Any new dishes or anything that you wanted to share?
Well, you know, one thing, it's like, this is actually not exciting.
Okay.
But, you know, this is also the first year we're not doing Thanksgiving dinners that, you know, we've been doing that for actually before I had the food truck when I was just doing catering. So there's people who've been getting Thanksgiving made for me for like 12 years. And it's been really fun to do it. Like I really enjoy creating that kind of food, but it's been like, especially over the last like 7 years when it really grew into this like massive undertaking, it's been like preposterously stressful and
I'm sure.
difficult and you know, there was like 1 year, I think we catered like 1,300 families Thanksgiving dinners.
Wow.
In, you know, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Hoboken, and Red Bank. And the amount of logistics and coordination and planning and like prep and everything, every year I would like start in like the middle of the summer starting to plan it. And it would always be like something I kind of looked towards with like dread every year just because the amount of work and like sleepless nights for weeks and stuff just working and working. And yeah, this year I was like, I really just want to like have dinner with my family and let
you
my
deserve
staff
it.
Like have a holiday off. And you know, like again, like now people can get like vegan food so many places on Thanksgiving. When we started that, like there was nobody really offering vegan Thanksgiving catering.
Even what was available in the grocery store in the frozen section isn't what is available now. There's so much more
variety
now.
You can go to like Whole Foods and probably get a pretty decent thing. And,
yeah.
And I just felt like, dude, it's just not worth me like stressing my entire staff out for so long and wearing myself out for that.
So now you guys are issuing your recipes, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be putting out like a handful of recipes just, you know, for people to follow on their own if they want. And
where will they be?
Just through our social media.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So everyone should definitely look for your recipes. I'm sure there's a lot of people who, whether they've gotten your food or haven't, would love to have a new recipe to inspire them for Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
so
be
that's
some desserts
awesome.
And some like sides and proteins and stuff.
That's
like
so
that.
Exciting. That's awesome that people will now be able to make their own cinnamon snail Thanksgiving items, dishes at home and share it with their family and hopefully inspire some of their non-vegan family members to go vegan. Which is what the ultimate goal is, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Adam. It was such a pleasure.
It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the Vegan Connection podcast. Make sure to follow the Vegan New Yorker and the Cinnamon Snail on Instagram.